Hello, and welcome to
Bell on Earth,
the podcast.
My name is Cassidy.
My name is Casey.
And together we are the Bell Sisters. Join us each week as we corrupt your soul
and bring you to salvation,
discussing life, death, and everything in between.
Are you afraid of getting into heaven?
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome
to our humble abode.
Yeah, it's very humble. It's very abode.
It's humble superstar.
Shout out Kyle.
Shout out Kyle.
Anyway, so yeah, welcome to Bell on Earth.
The podcast.
The humble podcast.
If anything, it's more like the egomaniac podcast.
True.
Because we're constantly right.
Yeah.
And we just make all the correct points.
The correct podcast.
Yes, exactly.
So today, as we talk about euthanasia, we will continue to be correct about it.
Yeah.
I love how we don't, like, just talk about, like, I don't know, like, we're not talking about, like, the Kendrick and Drake.
I honestly don't even understand what's going on.
No.
I don't care.
No, I don't care. I will say, though, just because, like, obviously it's all everyone's fucking talking about, but yeah. I listened to Drake's song before I even knew that it was, like, about Kendrick and, like, drama and stuff, and I was like, oh, I kind of like this. And then, like, because I'd already listened to it, I was like, oh, well, now that I know it's, like, drama, I kind of want to, like, listen to a little bit of, like, Kendrick's, because people put clips and stuff. Honestly, it's so boring.
Really?
Like, Drake's is one that I, like, listened to and enjoyed before I even knew that it was a diss track. And Kendrick's is one where it's, like, you only, like, listen to it
because
it's a diss track. You don't, like, listen to it, like, recreationally.
I need a diss track that's recreational. That's how I felt about Bigfoot by Nicki Minaj.
Yeah.
It was bad. No, it was actually just a bad song.
Yeah.
But it was also, like, a bad diss track, where it's, like, Hiss by Meg Thee Stallion.
Right.
Slight.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was a good song. I don't really care about the dissing of it, but, like, it was a good song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly how I felt.
I like Kendrick Lamar more than Drake. So I think it's interesting that you say that. But I also like J. Cole better than both of them.
Yeah, so. I always see those memes of, like, J. Cole. Of, like, oh,
staying,
like,
out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you're, like, galloping through a field of flowers or something.
Yeah. He's honestly very talented. He does, like, a really good job on his albums. And I just like him a lot. I think he's a really good artist. Whereas, like, I don't really care so much for Drake. Or Kendrick, really. But I like Kendrick better than Drake.
Personally, like, I kind of prefer Drake. Like, Kendrick has some, like, good songs. But, I don't know. Drake's, like, a little bit, dare I say, more iconic.
Fair.
In my perspective. Yeah. And, like, yes, I know he's done, like, fucked up things. I'm not, like, defending him necessarily as a person.
I mean, they're both predators. That's, like, the whole point of these dissings or whatever.
I know, that's what's funny to me, is that, like, neither of them are, like, good people.
Yeah, it's just predator on
like,
predator.
Like, I literally, like, don't care about either of them, but, like... Yeah.
No, I mean, like, music-wise.
Yeah.
I there are some Drake songs that I like.
Especially, like, old Drake, like...
Yeah, no.
Slapped.
That's what I think it is I like old Drake, I don't like new Drake. But I like Kendrick.
I feel like new Drake is few and far between.
Yeah.
But, like, old Drake, like, banger upon banger.
Exactly.
And then the bangers just kind of, like, got diluted.
Yeah, they just, like, fizzled out.
As they went on. Yeah. But honestly, like, Push Ups, like, it was a good song.
Fair.
And then, like, the Kendrick one, yeah, I listened to it, and I literally, like, you know what I did? I turned off the song and just went to, like, the lyrics. Because I couldn't listen to it. It was just fucking boring to
That's
me.
That's what I did to Bigfoot, too, so yeah. I get it.
I was like, again, I don't really care, but I kind of just wanted to... The part that I actually wanted to listen to was, like, the part where he just, like, talks, like, blatantly about everything he hates about Drake.
Yeah, that was the part I also hear, like, on the reels, and yeah. I was like, oh, that's Fenty.
So that's the part that I was trying to, like, get to, but I just couldn't. I couldn't reach it. I couldn't reach it, so I just went to lyrics.com, or, like, Lyric Genius, or whatever the fuck it is, and I was like, ah, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll just read it. And it was just, like, boring, and I don't know, like a diss track. Again, it needs to be something that is still entertaining.
Yeah.
Not just, like, especially if you're stupid. And also, like, not for nothing, but he, like, has a whole thing where he's, like, talking to Drake's son, and it's, like, don't bring children into this. That's just, like, not proving your point.
No, that, like, actually disproves your point. Exactly. When you, like, talk to children.
No, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
So, anyway. Pass both of them.
Anyway, euthanasia is our topic for the day.
They should both be euthanized.
Yeah. That's it. That's the whole podcast. That's the
podcast. We're pro Kendrick and Drake euthanize. You. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Even the word gets euthanized. So.
Wow.
Yeah, perfect transition into our topic for today. Which is euthanasia. We're going to be covering both human and animal euthanasia. Personally, I work in the veterinary field, so I have a lot of experience and thoughts about, like, euthanasia when it comes to the, like the veterinary aspect of it, which is obviously the most common form of euthanasia.
Right.
They do have, like, assisted suicide in certain states that's legal, but for humans. But even then, first of all, I don't like that it's called assisted suicide. I think that's kind of a weird term.
Yeah, I think we should just stick with euthanasia. Like, it's cute, it's flirty,
yeah,
it's
no, fun. Like, the word, like, it's one of those things where, you know, like, those posts where it's like, if it didn't have this meaning, it'd be a cute name.
Yeah.
Like, euthanasia kind of sounds like Anastasia, and, like, that's a pretty name, and, like, if it wasn't about, like, dying, or, like, putting someone to sleep, I'd be like, euthanasia? Sexy.
Cute.
Cute.
No, I agree. And also, like, realistically, it's not assisted suicide.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the point of euthanasia.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're not necessarily assisting someone in taking their life when they don't need it.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing, like, euthanasia towards animals, it's putting them out of their misery.
Yes.
And that's the same with people. But we'll get into that a little bit more. I think we should start with the animal side of it to, like, ease the people into our thoughts and prayers
around this topic. Yeah, you're going to need some prayers for this.
You're going to need some thoughts.
We're the thoughts, and we'll bring the prayers. Actually, we went to church today, so we're full of prayers.
Yeah,
we're full of amen.
Amen.
God is inside of us.
Oh, he's deep inside.
We ate that bread.
He quenched our thirst or whatever the fuck they said.
Yeah. So, okay. So, yeah, we'll start with the animal side of things because, you know, that's, like, the one that people are most familiar with, and I think that's the one that people are obviously more, like, comfortable with as well.
Yeah. Which is honestly so interesting to me, and, like, I get it because I think we've framed animals as, like, a different thing from, like, being alive, which I think is really fascinating and something we could also delve into a little bit. But, like, I think it's crazy that, like, we're so okay with, like, just killing animals, like, all the time. But when it comes to humans, we can't have, like, a real discussion about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of that is the fact that, like, animals are seen both, like, socially and legally as property.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much easier to make that decision for them.
Yeah, well, humans used to be property, too.
Some of them.
Canceled right there, then.
For Kelly Osbourne.
Oh, my God. Oh, no, I can't be compared to her. Please don't.
Anyway. But,
yeah, like, I totally get that. And, like, of course, also, like, we do rely on animals for food. And as we've talked about in other episodes, like, we don't necessarily disagree with, like, using animals for food. I think that we should use them a lot less and a lot more ethically, right? For sure. But I totally understand, like, eating animals, right? Like, it is kind of the circle of life, ultimately. Again, I think that the practices that we do now are not part of the circle of life, and they don't help anything.
No, it's just a circle of capitalism.
Yeah, literally. It's just one circle.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily disagree with eating animals, even though I am a vegetarian. I think that as long as it's done, like, ethically and in, like, a humane way. And humane, I mean, not just, like, putting them all in, like, a house and whatever and, like, just slaughtering them. Like, doing it more, like, not necessarily even the way they, like, live their lives, but, like, hunting, I think, is more humane than, like, slaughterhouses, even. But that's kind of, like, delving off topic. But, again, like, I'm not necessarily against eating animals, and so I do understand this, like, distinction that we have, and also they don't necessarily, like, look like humans, and they don't talk like humans, they don't communicate the same way. So I do understand how we have this distinction in our minds that animals are different from us, but in terms of, like, death, like, we all die the same way, realistically, and, like, it just kind of almost, like, irks me, but it's also, like, intriguing to me that, like, we're so ready to just kill animals in circumstances where we're not, like, gaining anything from it, but we're not okay with it when it comes to humans, in terms of the fact that, like, we can empathize and sympathize with an animal that is, like, in pain or sick or aggressive and whatever, and we can sympathize with that and be like, okay, like, I totally understand the decision here, but we can't do that for humans. And it just is very intriguing to me and very, I don't know, just a little bit weird, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's very strange. And, like, coming from the veterinary world and, like, having seen so much of it, given, like, yeah, like, I worked in general practice for a little while, and, like, you see very different sides of euthanasia in different aspects of veterinary work.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because in the general practice, like, your everyday vet, you know, like, you're more focused on, like, the health and well-being, and you see those, like, long-term cases. So, you know, you see mainly the cases where the pet is, like, old age, or you see those cases where the pet is aggressive to a point where they're not safe in their own environment, or even, like, safe from themselves. They put other, like, animals and other people and stuff in danger. And behavioral euthanasias are interesting because, like, most veterinarians, unless they have a built relationship with this person, like the client and the patient, they're not going to do it. Like, I've worked in like urgent care and now emergency settings, and 99% of the time, unless someone comes in with police report upon police report and, like, vet records and stuff like that, most vets that I work with are not going to do a behavioral euthanasia. They're just not going to do it. You go to your GP for that. So GP mainly sees those kind of cases. So it's interesting to see the difference between, like, those situations where you see just, like, you know, like, old age pets, or, like, pets that have some kind of disease, like cancer or something that's chronic, and they've been going for treatment but are just, like, not at a point where they're, like, not stable, and and it's just a poor quality of life. And then you also see, when you go into, like, urgent care and, like, emergency settings, you see those patients where you either are at a point of, like, no return with an injury, or you see the ones that really suck are the ones that there's a possibility of them improving, but finances get in the way. And those, I think, are the worst ones for me. I personally, like, I know it's weird maybe to say right off the bat, without, like, someone, like, really knowing much about euthanasia, but euthanasia is honestly my favorite, not, okay, I wouldn't say my favorite, but, like, one of my favorite parts of working in veterinary care. Not because I like to kill animals.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that we have that option to not just, like, let them to fucking continue to suffer. Like, I think it's so important to have that last route of action where you don't have to just send someone on their way and let this, like, animal suffer until they just, like, die at home. And, like, I feel in human medicine, like, sometimes that is the case where, like,
yeah,
you don't really have an option to, like, stop trying.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of weird to me.
Yeah. Like, the person may have that option, but, like, the doctors don't, which is kind of ridiculous. Well, I feel because
like the person doesn't really either. Like, unless they live in a state where, like, you can go through assisted suicide, like, I feel like people are just forced to, like, continue themselves through these treatments or just, like, stop everything and basically, like, wait till they die.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I just mean, like, you can, like, take a bunch of pills or whatever and die, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess you can literally commit suicide, but even that, like, why do you have to resort to taking your own life?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. that in itself is, like, disgusting.
And that's also assuming they have the ability, like, physically or, like, mentally to do that.
Yeah.
Not necessarily emotionally, because, like, I feel like at some point, like, there are certain cases where I think you, like, kind of lose, like, that sense of self, and you're literally just a human, like, just a body. But it is kind of ridiculous that, like, it has to get to that point where you can't just, like, and, like, and then people are like, oh, it's so sad. Why? Why is it sad?
No, literally, because, like, it's so, that's what's interesting about, like, having to confront euthanasia so often,
mm-hmm.
Is that you really, like, grasp, not really grasp, but, like, you're confronted with death so much more than the average person.
Yeah.
And, like, you realize that, like, everyone knows it, but, like, you visually see and emotionally understand that, like, death is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, forces you to face that fact. And, like, yeah, it's really hard. And it's, like, that kind of concept where even if, like, you look up all the science in the world, like, you can never fully comprehend what death is or, like, what it means to, like, what comes after death.
Yeah.
And I think that's scary, is that, like, that unknown for most people is something that, like, people are not comfortable understand or, like, holding uncomfortable topics a lot of the time,
mm-hmm.
which, like, I mean, yeah, like, I get that, but I think when you see, like, so many of these cases of, like, your pet, like, needs relief,
mm-hmm.
and it really sucks when, like, you have those people who aren't capable of giving that to their pet, and, like, they won't
mm-hmm.
accept the fact that their pet needs to go, and this animal is, like, straight up just, like, suffering. And, like, I don't know, it's just, I know that I'm just, like, more comfortable with euthanasia than, like, other people are, just given the amount of times that I've seen it, and, like, I can tell when, like, the time is right.
Yeah.
But it is hard to make that decision, and I get that.
And also, too, I do think that, just to give some credit to the owners, you don't have that same connection with the pet that, like, they do.
I mean, yeah, but, like, I also feel that, like, watching your pet suffer is, like, not ideal.
No, I'm not saying that I necessarily agree. I'm just saying, like, to their credit, like, they've seen their pet through so much.
Of course.
That you haven't, necessarily. I feel like before we get deeper into, like, the ethics behind euthanasia, I would wonder if you were able to talk about, like, the process that you guys go through when it comes to deciding to euthanize, as well as, like, not necessarily, like, step-by-step, play-by-play of, like, going through the euthanasia, but maybe just, like, the process of, like, kind of generally, like, what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, so when
just
it comes to...
Just to give some context to the conversation.
Yeah, for sure. So, usually when it comes to euthanasia, again, it just depends on the circumstances. So, there is this one company that we work with, like, a lot of the times in... At least, like, I know they have, like, a lot of other locations in the U.S. especially. They're called Fond Memories, and they do actually have a kind of, like, a chart, like, a quality of life chart.
Mm-hmm.
So not that everyone, like, uses that, but I feel like in general that's a good, like, idea to kind of put in your head of like, well, when the veterinarian is going through the discussion of like, for example, like either a animal that has like a chronic disease or they're just like going through old age, usually what we'll discuss is quality of life. Because a lot of the times the owners are like, well, he was like eating fine yesterday, but it's like, okay, well, the past like 7 days, right? He's had one good day and six bad ones. What is the quality of life there?
Yeah.
So a lot of the times when it comes to those kind of things, we discuss just the quality of the life that they're living and like when do you get to a point where it's like you don't want them to deteriorate to a point that they're just like suffering unnecessarily. And I think it is hard to make that decision for some people of like, well, am I doing it too early, too soon? Did I wait too long? So it's a lot of the time finding that middle ground of like, when do I get to a point before they like really start to suffer? When it comes to other situations like traumatic injury, for example, a case that we had fairly recently, there was this pet that got hit by a car. And the pet, like, and it was like a stable pet, like it was a young, I think it was a Chihuahua, pretty young, I think it was like 3 years old, but its pelvis was just fractured into like a million different fucking pieces. So when it comes to those kind of situations, it's like, well, a big part of it is, you know, like it's really expensive to do a surgery like that.
Yeah.
To really fix the pelvis, and that's going to come with a lot of other problems down the road in terms of like healing and recovery. And so sometimes there are situations like that where it still kind of comes to quality of life, partially finances, but partially quality of life of like, what would it look like moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously there are cases where, you know, they go into like sepsis or something like that, where it's like they're just deteriorating, they're going to inevitably pass away anyway, so let's like stop the suffering before it gets to that point. So that's like kind of an idea of like what types of situations come into play when it comes to deciding on euthanasia. The process of euthanasia itself, the most common one that I've seen is going to be intravenous. So it's going to be into the veins. So typically we will put a IV catheter in, and the most common route is to do two different drugs. So the first one is called propofol, which is going to basically make the pet fall asleep. It is used for anesthesia a lot, to like induce anesthesia. It's one of the more common ones. People know it from like the Michael Jackson case, because it's what Michael Jackson was taking to fall asleep at night, and that's what ultimately like killed him.
Right.
as far as I'm aware. But yeah, it's like, if you've ever seen it, it's the like milky looking one. People will call it like anesthetic milk or like sleep milk or whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. But it looks like milk.
Milky that makes you go sleepy.
Yeah, it is. That's literally what it is. So yeah, typically what will happen is the veterinarian will inject propofol so that the pet does fall asleep. So they're not passed away yet, but they are just like actually asleep. And then we will use euthazole, which is going to be the drug that actually stops the heart from beating. So that's typically the process where, you know, like if it's something that's planned, like if the euthanasia is planned, either like in the exam room, or if the clinic has a comfort room, you're typically brought in there, your pet has a catheter placed, or whatever animal it is has a catheter placed or some kind of IV access, and then the drugs are given when you're ready for them to be put down. So that's usually like the gist of what happens.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm glad that we like kind of discussed that a little bit, because you know, personally, I don't really know like the whole process, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this won't know. So I think that's pretty interesting.
For sure. And like, even people who have had their pet put down, like not everyone wants to be present for it. So yeah, like, even right. If you have had a pet that was put down, like maybe you haven't seen it or like really understood the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also would like to hear from you personally, like what would you qualify as suffering in an animal?
So
I guess like what would you consider almost like the symptoms of like severe suffering?
Yeah. So again, it just depends on the case. Right. When it comes to like disease or even old age, I think when it comes to pain or inappetence that can't be managed any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Because for example, like when your pet gets old, they might get like arthritis and stuff like that. And like that kind of stuff is managed with pain meds. It's like you can get them comfortable.
Right.
But when your pet cannot be comfortable any longer, I feel that is suffering. When they get to a point where they can't like do things on their own. I know there are people, and like even I have a difficult time with certain rescues that will keep putting money towards patients who they don't really have an ability to walk and stuff like that anymore. Personally, I think it's very case by case. I do think that when they like lose ability to like exist on their own, basically, I do kind of question of like, well, like, again, what is their quality of life there?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, when it comes to things like injuries and like wounds that can't be medically managed, I think that like
the
would
pelvis.
Be right. Yeah. Like the pelvis, or you know, like there are just like certain wounds that just are kind of too much to medically manage.
Mm-hmm.
so like that, I think, could be considered suffering. Just in general, like anything that cannot be managed to a point that the pet is comfortable on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
that's when I consider it to be suffering, and to a point where I don't think that's fair for that pet to be going through that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's brilliant.
Thanks.
Yeah. I just like wanted to discuss it because I want to put context to this discussion, because I don't want to be like, we should just euthanize everyone. You know what I mean?
Right.
I do want to have like an ethical discussion around this. And I do think putting into context what suffering actually looks like will help people kind of understand like where we're coming from with all of this. I would also like for you to tell the story of the dog that you didn't euthanize, Mr. Bullet.
For sure. Yeah, there are, this is like one of those stories where like,
I think it's a good example,
yeah,
of like why you wouldn't euthanize in this situation.
Yeah. There are two cases that I think are ones that I can bring up. One is one that ended up surviving and one is one that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Actually there are three, but anyway, two main ones. So one of them, yes, so there was this dog that came in when I was actually at a urgent care style place, and this dog came in after he escaped from his yard and had gotten attacked by a larger dog. This dog was, I forget how old he was, but he was young and very healthy, and otherwise no other health issues besides a bunch of lacerations on him that could not just be healed by themselves. This owner did not have any money and even like really couldn't pay for the exam fee. But a lot of the times when you kind of bring your pet in, and like even if you don't have money, unless there are a few exceptions, and most places will kind of do bare minimum. However, most of the time, the main focus, as at least it should be, is to stabilize the patient. So typically we'll get it to a stable place where we can have that discussion of, okay, what's going to happen next. For this dog, this owner did not have any money whatsoever. I had been trying to get like grants going for her, but like I couldn't really get anything in the moment. So I had actually offered for her to surrender the pet to me so that I could basically just pay my employee discount price and get him back to where he was and be able to have him recover. Because this was a patient, like I said, who had no other health issues. He was a young dog who literally just had lacerations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those unfortunate cases where if I didn't have her surrender him to me, then he would have been euthanized simply because there wasn't the funds there to be able to help him.
Right.
And like, what kind of sucks to me in that situation in particular was, listen, there are cases where like medical management are in the like tens of thousands. And I think that's different. But this, the total bill was like $2,000. Less than, actually. Under $2,000. And that is no slight whatsoever to the owner, because, like, fuck, I can't, like, pull $2,000 out of my ass.
Right.
Most people can't. However,
it's not
in
enough.
The grand scheme of things,
yeah.
That's, like, not a lot of money.
Yeah.
And for this dog's life to be on the line over $2,000 was, like, kind of just disgusting to me. And that's one of those cases where, like, I don't like the fact that we resort so fast to euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
And in the human world, I don't think that a person would just be left to die over a $2,000 bill.
Right.
That's one of the things where it's just, like, it's just going to go into fucking collections, and that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
But so this pet in particular, yes, like I said, I'd had him surrendered to me, and I actually had been able to sum up the story. I was able to get that grant a little while afterwards, and he ended up going back to his original owner, which was really cool, and I was really happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
The other case that we had was one that we did end up having to euthanize, which really sucked. It was a Great Dane, right? No. He was a Dalmatian.
Mm.
It was a Dalmatian with a urinary blockage. And he became unstable because, if anyone knows anything about urinary blockages, basically there is a blockage in the urethra that does not allow them to excrete any urine. And so the bladder fills up with urine to a point that it can burst and cause, like, a multitude of issues.
Yeah.
And ultimately death. So this owner also did not have any money. And it's one of those cases where, like, I wasn't really in a position to be able to help. I wasn't able to get funding. And this pet did have to be euthanized. And unfortunately, it also was a case where, like, really the pet wasn't... he was fairly young. He would have been okay otherwise. He had no other, like, real health issues. And that one really sucked. And this goes just to, you know, this ends up being, like, a company-to-company kind of deal where I had issues with this company regardless. But the doctor was doing everything that she could. It, honestly, he would have survived if he had just been, like, transferred to an emergency, or had gone to an emergency to begin with and wouldn't have had to pay, like, multiple bills.
Yeah.
Because realistically, like, we didn't have the, like, a big part of the reason why, like, I couldn't just have him surrendered to me was because we would have had to have him go to somewhere that they had, like, surgical capabilities, which at that place, we couldn't do, like, abdominal surgeries, which would have been his situation.
Right.
And so this owner was not able to transfer to emergency where he could have had this stone removed. And the doctor that we had at our clinic was doing everything she could have fucking done. And we stayed, like, hours past closing just trying to, like, flush this thing back into the bladder just to get him stable for the night and have the owner come up with funds to get it removed the next day. Because this pet would have not lasted the night with, like, in the condition that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those cases where money came into play, situation came into play, and we did have to euthanize a dog that honestly could have survived otherwise. So, like, those are some situations that just, like, it sucks.
Yeah, it really sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, like, I think it's unique to the veterinary world, where in the human world, like, yes, funds definitely do come into play, but when it comes to something like they're going to die, then procedures are done prior to talking about, like, funds. And yeah. Then funds are discussed later.
Because, again, like, in the, like, human world, like, you have insurance. And, yes, insurance is a beast on its own.
Mm-hmm.
However,
not everyone has insurance either.
Well, no, not everyone has insurance, but also, like, the hospitals themselves get funded by the government typically, or, like, other entities, whereas, like, veterinary companies are, like, privately owned. Even if they're, like, corporate, it's still under, like, that one corporate sphere.
Yeah.
And so they're still a business, which is like, it's not their fault. It just kind of sucks when like you don't really have another like course of action to take.
Right.
You can't just like fucking send it to collections, unfortunately. Like we get blamed a lot in the veterinary field for like finances and it being all about money and shit. And like, I promise you, like 99% of the people who work in the veterinary field are like already underpaid and overworked. And like, I promise you it's not about the money, because doctors typically do not make any commission off of that kind of shit.
Yeah. It's the corporate people are making money off.
Yeah. The people who aren't in the hospital are the ones who you should be mad about.
Yeah.
But yeah, like in the human world, like a lot of this time, like a lot of the time the finances are, yeah, they're talked about, but like in emergency settings where it's like a life threatening thing, things typically are kind of just like done and money's dealt with afterwards.
Right. And like continued treatment is typically where people stop because of insurance or because of, other factors. Right. But typically, like, in emergency situations, yes, like, life-saving measures are necessary to perform due to, like, the fact that, like, that's kind of the point. And also, there's a lot of, like, protocol in terms of that.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to something as simple as, like, unblocking a bladder or, you know, putting some lacerations back together or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's, like, the troubling part, is that, like, it was one of those things where it's not going to be, like, a 10-hour surgery that is going to save this patient's life. It's, like, it took, like, an hour max to suture some lacerations back together. Nothing was even, like, more than kind of, like, superficial. And don't get me wrong, like, when I say superficial, I mean, like, it wasn't, like, the, like, abdomen wasn't open. It wasn't, like, chest wounds that were, like, causing real like internal issues. It was deep wounds, but they were all like the dermal layers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like organs were flooding out of their body.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's like where we're coming from with this, and that's why I wanted you to tell those stories, because I don't, again, want to like not have context to this type of discussion and just sound like evil people, because you know we're a little evil, but we're not that evil.
No. And like, again, that's why I think there's a duality to it, where there are certain times when I think euthanasia should not be used, and I hate that it's resorted to that. I think it's, like, great that we have the option for the pets that are suffering and shouldn't have to continue to suffer, but it's also a double-edged sword.
Yeah. It's kind of like it's used a little bit too much in veterinary care, and it's used a little bit too little in human care.
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, where we're coming from, is that we just don't want people to suffer. As we've talked about in so many different episodes at this point in the season, right? In antinatalism, in the discussions around veganism and carnivorism, like, these are all things that come up in terms of suffering, right? Like, we just don't want to see living sentient beings suffering. And I don't think it's necessarily fair to hold on to someone who is literally on the table, basically dead already, and allow them to continue to live in like deep physical pain just because it makes us feel better. Yes, ultimately, you know, grief is also suffering, right? And that is something that you'll have to go through when it comes to death and everything else. But would you rather like grieve a person or an animal that you had in good conscience, like, given the right choice and, like, given them the ability to, like, let go and not be in pain? Or would you really rather, like, sit by someone's bedside and watch them, like, deteriorate and, like, writhe in pain and suffer and not know where they are and not know who you are and, like, sit there and just, like, watch them die? Like, would you rather that, or would you rather just, like, set them free?
Yeah.
In my opinion, personally, and we've gone through this in multiple different aspects, both with pets and with humans, but in my opinion, like, I truly do believe that ethically, it's much better to allow someone to pass on than it is to allow them to sit in suffering. But again, the reason I wanted you to tell those stories is that I don't want to necessarily like, hinder this discussion in any way and say, sit here and say, like, oh, like, euthanasia is the way to go for everything, because it's not. There's plenty of cases, like you just said, where putting an animal or even putting, like, a human down wouldn't necessarily be the right choice. And that's, I think, the nuanced, complicated, complex conversation that we have to have around it, because if we were to kind of have a little bit more discussion around euthanasia with humans, would that put people in danger, right? Like, we've already seen certain cases where sometimes that has happened, and they're not necessarily, like, euthanizing, quote-unquote, this person, but they are putting them in medically induced comas or medically dangerous situations where they does lead to death. And I also think that that's, you know, that system can become very abused if we were to instate or talk, like, have this nuanced discussion kind of brought up in the human field. Like, would people just go and, like, have their kids euthanized because they just don't want them anymore? You know what I mean? Or would people just go and be like, well, my, you know, wife's being a bitch, just go euthanize her? You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's a little bit, like, silly, funny, haha, but, like,
but there are cases. It is until it's not.
Right, there are going to be cases like that, and that's where you have to have these very nuanced discussions, because I truly, again, believe that there are people, like, we've had people in our lives and also just people in our families where, like, I don't necessarily want to give out, like, which family member it was, but there was a family member in our history who was held on to way too long, and they didn't want to pull the plug, and she was brain dead. She was completely brain dead, but the body was still alive, and they just wouldn't allow her to go. And that's the case where it's like, she's already brain dead. Like, just let her go. Like, why are you holding on? Like, why are you allowing her to suffer?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, again, like, there are cases out there where people put their loved ones into medically dangerous situations, and that's kind of like the double-edged sword that I think can come about with humans, right? I don't necessarily think that a lot of people with pets would necessarily just, like, you know, like they'll bring them to shelters and everything else, and that can lead to euthanasia and stuff like that, but it's a little bit different in terms of the fact that I think when it comes to euthanasia, it's a little bit more on the vet. But when you're talking about sentient beings that can communicate and be like, hey, like, this person's not doing well, and then that person says, yeah, I'm not doing well because they've been manipulated into saying that, like, how do you kind of draw that line, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, so for an example, for a case of, like, human euthanasia that I think, like, most people would deem as acceptable, this, like, is kind of general, but, like, there's also one that I've seen that's, like, been kind of, like a famous one for it. But there was a woman who had been diagnosed with, I forget what type of cancer. But
it was a terminal brain cancer.
It was brain cancer?
Pretty sure I know who you're talking about, and yeah, it was brain cancer.
Yeah, so there was a type of terminal cancer, probably brain cancer, that, again, it was terminal, so she knew that she only had X amount of time to live, and basically she had made the decision of wanting to go through assisted suicide when she felt correct, which I think, like, you know, I think most people would be understanding of something like that, where it's like, before you get to a point where you're going to be suffering, before you get to a point where, like, you're not, your body isn't really, like, healthy and capable of, like, daily activities anymore, like, yeah, you're going to die anyway, so, like, why can't you pass on before? Yes, number one, choose it, and pass on before you get to a point where, like, you are miserable, and you are frail, and you are just, like, unhappy.
And in pain.
And in pain.
And not even, like, fully there.
And I think that's, like, a beautiful way to be able to use something like this.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that you brought up that case, because I remember that, and I actually kind of disagree with you in one point, in that people understand it, and I absolutely don't think that's true.
Not everyone. I just think, like, when you're talking about assisted suicide, like, that's one of the cases where, like, most people would be more understanding because it's cancer. Whereas, for example, there are people who have like mental illness.
Yeah.
Who people are like, well, like, that's not something you're allowed to like euthanize yourself over. Right. Whereas like terminal cancer, like if you're going to talk about the topic of assisted suicide and you're going to have anyone that's going to like be okay with it, it's going to be something like that.
Right. No, I think that's fair. But I did want to bring this up because I remember when that woman, when that happened, and people were like really mad at her, which I think is really interesting. And I think it's why topics like this don't get talked about nearly enough, is because people like get really like, of course, uncomfortable around the conversation of death and suicide and you know, just like that kind of general topic, but they also get really angry. And I think that's a really interesting emotion for to like come up over something so like personal,
yeah,
and something so like unique and difficult as like taking your own life and doing it in an ethical way prior to you like deteriorating. And I do think it has to do with like this fact that like I don't know, like do we not believe that humans should have that choice, or do we all really think that we want to live forever? I certainly don't want to live forever.
Right.
And it's also like, I think what angered people a lot in that scenario was the fact that she was a younger woman, right? If it was an older woman, I don't think anyone would have cared that much, to be honest. Like, not to be cruel, but like people who are older, it's kind of like, well, you know, like they've lived a good life. But this woman was younger. She was in her 20s. She had just gotten married and all this stuff, and people were angry at her for making this decision. And I just think that's very interesting, because why are you angry at her? Like, it's not her fault. Do you remember any of
like the reasons that people like specifically had?
It was quite a while ago. I'll put a news article in the description, so maybe you know, if there's reasons, they can come up with it.
My question would be like, what are these reasons, and are they like actual like
reasonable reasons?
Reasonable arguments, or is it like either something religious or something that's kind of like you're projecting your own fears and misunderstandings?
I think it's kind of a mixture of all of them. Of course, religion always comes into play, because
there are people who are against like even pet euthanasia because it's like you're interfering with the act of God, and it's like, well, I feel like that's just so personal that it's like you can't even really argue with something like that.
Yeah. Well, and also too, like there are certain denominations of, you know, Christianity as well as other religions, Islam and Judaism and stuff, where if you commit suicide or take any life, yeah, it's a sin and you will not go to heaven.
Yeah.
So there is like that nuance behind it, which kind of is like almost a different discussion. And yeah, you can't really argue with it. And there's always going to be people against it. And I think that's fair. If that's truly what you believe and that's something that you can't get over or whatever, like that's your choice.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine, but that's kind of like your decision. It's not really for other people. And that kind of goes with like anything realistically. But again, it's just something that, you know, you have to kind of make that decision for yourself and for your family.
It's just interesting because it's like, let's compare it to something like abortion, where it's like, yeah. I can at least, like, do I agree? No, but I can at least understand where you're like, your argument is for like the baby. And it's like, okay, like, yes, you're making a decision for your own body, but, like, you're also making a decision for, like, another life. Where it's, like, with something like this, like, you literally only have your own life to be making the decision for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, like, leave people to make decisions for themselves.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, like, just because your religion says something doesn't mean that I should have to suffer for it.
Yeah.
But that's, like, truly, I think, and this is, like, again, a whole other discussion, but I do think that a lot of people think that way. Which is obnoxious.
Which is just kind of selfish.
Yeah, it's literally just selfish, obnoxious, and it's anti-religious. Because wouldn't God want all of us to, like,
euthanize ourselves?
Yeah, exactly. But, like, if God gave us free will, why didn't God want us to use it?
Yeah.
Like, why is it your choice what I do? That's my decision. But I also think that there's a mixture of, like, she's so young, like, they could have done something when, like, realistically, how much... Right, like, how much could have been done? I don't know. I'm not her doctor. But I, you know, I'm sure that, like, they would have exhausted all the options, right? Again, it's a younger woman, so... Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. Usually that fixes the problem.
Yeah. They could just have, like, an old crusty man, like, put his finger on her forehead or something.
Yeah.
All better.
Did you try that?
Doctor! yeah. But then I also think that it was a lot of, like, projection of, like, well, I couldn't do that for myself, so how dare you do that to yourself kind of thing. And, you know, I just think that's a horrible argument. Like, if you're uncomfortable with death, like, that's your own problem, and you don't have to confront it if you don't want to, but ultimately it's going to happen one day. You're not going to live forever. Even the richest billionaire in the whole world is not going to live forever. Like, that's just how life is.
Even the one that's, like, injecting his son's blood or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I promise you, Sarah, you're not going to live forever.
No, you're not. Like, I hate to break it to you, but even if you live to, like, 100 and something, you're going to die. Like, great. Like, you just add an extra, what, like, year to your life? Do you really want to be here? Whatever. Like, it's just ridiculous. I personally... This is, like, maybe going a little bit off topic, but I feel like I personally have a, I don't even know how to explain this, but almost, like, an acquaintanceship with death. Like, I...
Love them.
Don't laugh.
Very dainty.
Yeah. Like, I feel like we have communicated, right, in some capacity over the course of my life. I've had a lot of experiences where I've had to confront it and my own mortality. And I really don't have any issue. Like, do I personally feel like I want to die right now? No. Like, but I also am not going to fight it in any way. So I feel like that informs my opinion around all of this, because I don't fear death and I don't see it as this horrible, scary, unknown thing. Of course, it's still, like, unknown to me in so many ways. Like, I don't personally understand it, but I'm okay with that, and I've come to a peace with not knowing what's going to happen, and I, you know, I'm at peace with that, and I am at peace with my mortality, and I'm okay with the fact that eventually one day I'll die, so today I'm going to continue to live my life. If today is the day that I die, then it is what it is, but as long as I'm happy with the life that I'm living, like, I'm okay with that. And so I think that kind of plays into, like, my personal opinion around this. So I do have sympathy for people that are very uncomfortable with death and very, very scared of it and very unable to confront their mortality or the mortality of others. I do totally understand it, and there's a lot of reasons for that, right? Like, I think there's plenty of people that have had traumatic experiences or, you know, whatever, whatever. But I also think that ultimately death isn't a scary or bad thing. And sometimes we do have to allow people to go at the time that they're meant to go. While that may be hard for you, it's the right thing to do. And I don't think that's an unethical thing to say. And I don't think it's unethical to allow people to make that decision for themselves. I do think that we have to be a little bit careful, like I said, because there are people, I think, that could abuse the system. But there's also people who obviously have suicidal ideations, right? And that can, I think, kind of lead to some problems as well, because I do get it. I understand that. But I also don't necessarily think we should just, like, give in to that kind of thing. I do think that, like, if we can provide treatment and support, then that would be a lot better. But I do think that the more that we discuss death and suicide, and the more we become comfortable with it, we can provide that treatment. So it's kind of like this important discussion to have, right? Because, like, like I don't think people are going to abuse the system in that way, because like the more that we're able to talk about it, the more that they're able to talk about it, and the more that they're able to get resources. So I think if that's like a concern that people have around assisted suicide or legalizing euthanasia, I don't actually see that being a concern that I would personally have. And that kind of was a little bit of a ramble, but that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I'll have to share your opinions on it.
Yeah, this is our podcast.
This is literally us.
Yeah. This is me.
Yeah.
This is real. Wow.
Iconic. I think for me, like, my thoughts around, like, euthanasia as a whole and, like, death as a whole, I agree. I don't think that death in itself necessarily scares me. I think what most people come to fear is, like, the circumstances surrounding it.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, euthanasia is so interesting. Like, because, again, like, I've been confronted with it in so many different situations. And it's never, like, the death itself that's, like, really the problem. Like, yes, obviously it kind of is, because, like, you'll never see that the pet or the person again. So, like, obviously the death itself ends up being a problem. But I think a lot of the times, like, the circumstances surrounding that death ends up being what creates the problem or creates, like, the trauma of it.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to euthanasia in, like, the veterinary world, I think euthanasia and, like, death in itself is just naturally, like, morally gray.
Yeah.
I think most things kind of are morally gray, but I think, like, euthanasia is very, very morally gray. And I don't think that any situation is truly black or white. I think it's just kind of, like, lighter or darker shades of gray.
Yeah.
Like, I have seen, like, so many cases where, like, yeah, like, the act of euthanasia is what, like, brings peace to that animal. But it's not always, like, just a situation that's, like, super easy to comprehend or super, like, there's, like, a lot leading up to it or anything like that. And when it comes to humans, I feel it does become difficult. And I understand people's, like, uncertainty with it. And, you know, there's a different aspect of, like, when it comes to an animal, like, they... I mean, it's kind of hard because, like, they don't really know what's going on. And, like, yeah, like, animals, like, know what's going on, but, like, they kind of don't. They don't really have the decision-making for themselves. So it's, like, it's on the owner, it's on the veterinarian to be making this decision for them. So that's a little bit different. But, like, I understand when people get apprehensive when it comes to humans, because it's, like, well, you're either making it for your own self, or this person is not in a state of mind to be making it for themselves, and now it's other people making the decision for them, which that's where it becomes kind of tricky.
Right, especially when that's, like, your mom or your dad or your child.
Where it's, like, where does it come into play? Like, for example, when it comes to, like, Alzheimer's or dementia, where, like, you don't really know what's going on, like, an everyday basis. Like, you don't remember the people that are around you, but, like, you're still able to, like, eat. You're still, like, moderately healthy. Like, you're still functioning. It's just, like, your mind, like, is kind of gone. Where, like, in that case, like, is it ethical to euthanize someone over something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of, like, the argument of, like, disabilities and, like, abortion, where it's, like, is it ethical to abort a baby just because they possibly have, like, some kind of disability,
mm-hmm.
where it's like they can still live,
like, at least
a life, like, a decent life,
right? Just... like, they'll come out and, like, continue to live after they've been born,
right?
Because there are cases where, like, people give birth and the baby dies instantly.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, I think that's a little bit different of a discussion. But, yeah, like, if they come out, have disabilities, but they're still able to, like, continue living.
Yeah, like, even if, like, they need, like, some assistance.
Yeah.
Like, for example, like, with, like, someone who's older and has Alzheimer's, like, if they can still live a life with assistance, like, that's where that, like, quality of life comes into play for me. Where, like, even with animals, it becomes morally gray because, like, you're really depending on the owner to let you know, like, they have more good days than bad ones. Or they have more bad days than good ones. What's a bad day? What's a good day?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, that's where that gray area comes into play even for animals. Like, unless it's something that's, like, they're literally about to die and you're just going to, like, let them die in a more peaceful manner.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of different. But, like, that's where, like, the argument does become very tricky. And I do understand people's apprehension around it. And I have apprehension around it myself. And when it comes to, like, behavioral kind of stuff, I mean, I think a way that it can be abused in the human world just as it kind of becomes morally gray in the animal world where, like, we were talking about before, like, behavioral euthanasias.
I mean, we do have behavioral euthanasias in the human world. It's just called the death penalty.
Well, but not even with that, because it's like, well, there are people who maybe haven't, like, committed a crime that's, like, worthy of the death penalty per se, but mm-hmm. it's like, are they even capable of functioning in society in a safe way, and now they're just, like, basically being, like, contained.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, like, again, what quality of life is that?
Right.
And it's like, there's so many aspects to it where...
Yeah.
Like, there are people who just have, like, mental disabilities as well, where, like, they can't really function in life and in society in a proper way, and it's like, well, is it more morally ethical to basically just, like, keep them in a fucking room all day and, like, give them food and, like, not really be able to do anything with them and have them live a proper life? Or is it more morally ethical to, like, just kind of take them out of this world?
Yeah.
Like, where is it going to be? Where is the line drawn? Where is it going to be abused?
Right.
And I think that's where it becomes very tricky to talk about it.
Well, I think, honestly, when it comes to discussions like this, where it's very, very nuanced and very, very case by case, is the fact that we don't live in a case by case society. We live in a for the general masses society.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, that's the real downfall of our society, is the fact that we aren't really personalized. And, like, while I understand that you can't, well, no, you can, I do think that you can, like, kind of personalize things for everyone. And, like, should there be standard protocol for certain things? Sure. But if you want a well-functioning, healthy society, and this is, you know, my opinion, but of course it's right, you have to focus on the most evil, the most vulnerable, and the most, like, decrepit people of society. That's who you have to focus on. Everyone else will benefit from anything that you bring forward from that. But if you focus heavily on the people who, or animals or whatever, right, on the sentient beings, and I would even include plants in all of this and everything else, if you focus solely on the people that need it the most, then you can create a society that is more ethical, healthier, and safer and happier. And when you talk about that, it means personalizing everything. And I do believe that we could potentially create a society. I don't know if we can create it from this one. I don't know if it would have to be rebuilt. But I do think that you can create a model society where those people or whatever are the most cared for, right? And what I mean is that, like, when we're talking about, like, for example, euthanasia, if you have a case-by-case protocol, then you can examine every single piece of this case and say, okay, you know, here's a checkbox of, like, all these different things that they have to have in order to have a discussion around euthanasia. We have these checkboxes, and then, okay, then they can come in, we can have this discussion, right? And when I say that, it's like, okay, for example, you have an Alzheimer's patient. You have one patient here who can still eat, still function. They've kind of lost themselves, but they're still able to, like, move around and, like, do their own thing. Okay, well, like, can they eat, right? Can they breathe on their own? Can they do this, this, this?
And also, like, does their Alzheimer's, like, cause them grief? Like, are they someone who, like, even if they, like, don't recognize the people around them, it doesn't, like, cause them panic and fear?
Right, exactly. Like, here's all the little checkboxes around this, and, like, okay, well, you know, some of these boxes are checked, so maybe we should have this discussion later. But then you bring in another person, right, who has Alzheimer's but is not no longer eating, no longer sleeping, no longer breathing by themselves. Okay, like, now we have more checkboxes filled out, and maybe it's time to start having these discussions around quality of life, right? That's kind of what I'm saying, is that, like, in particular to euthanasia, I think that we have to really be careful and be very case by case and allow someone to have that discussion with the party themselves, if they're able to discuss it, or with parties around them who are discussing their life and their care and everything else. And also, too, when it comes to something like Alzheimer's, they're going to have medical professionals around them that you can also have discussions with, and you can continue to have, like, that kind of quality of care. When it comes to, like, terminal cancer patients, as long as they're kind of before that stage of no longer being able to talk or care for themselves, I think having that discussion with someone and sitting down and making it a personalized plan around how we want to do this would be a lot more effective and a lot more ethical than just allowing anyone, whoever, can sign up for this thing, right? And I think that when we start it from the bottom up and really, like, take it at a case-by-case level, then we can create a functioning system where people can benefit from something like this, right? Again, like, because then in that system, right, you have someone who is suffering, right, from severe mental illness. And maybe they go in and maybe really what they need is just better care or better, you know, a different environment or whatever it is, right? Maybe they do need just, like, something else in order to provide them a better quality of life. But if you have, like, someone who really can't take care of themselves and can't function in society, I don't know, personally to me, and maybe this is me being evil again or whatever, but I personally feel like if you cannot function in society and cannot, like, live a quality life without being a threat or a harm or a liability to yourself or other people, then is it really the best idea to just, like, continue to have this body alive? Because they're clearly not, like, getting a good quality of life. And, like, to me, that is suffering, right? Maybe they don't know they're suffering. And that's kind of another gray area is, well, do they even know that they're suffering? Are they physically capable or mentally capable of understanding suffering? And I think that that's, like, kind of, again, it's very nuanced and it's very complicated. But I do think that it's like, well, you know, you could either just, like, kind of let them run around a field all day or, you know, put them out of their misery.
Well, I also think that's where, like, the domestication of animals and of humans basically has kind of been a detriment to societies.
Yeah.
Because when you look at, like, just from, like, a very basic standpoint, like, when you look at a, like, pack of wild animals, like, yes, obviously they care for each other, they have, like, their own little societies, but, like, the ones who were weaker, the ones who are kind of the outcasts, the ones who can't contribute to the rest of the pack are going to die off. And it's unfortunately, but also kind of fortunately, like, benefits the rest of the pack and allows them to prosper more. And I think where, like, we have our downfalls, we try to force everyone to fucking survive in the world that we live in. And I don't think everyone is meant to survive in the world that we live in. And I don't think that's an evil thing to say. And I think that when you have those people who are very sick in, like, whatever regard, or just, like, don't, not that, like, they don't need to be alive in the fact that they, like, don't deserve life, per se, but just, like, again, when it comes to someone who is elderly and can't even exist on their own, like, when it comes to quality of life, when it comes to that kind of stuff, like, you are honestly, like, taking away resources from the rest of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking away, like, quality of care for the rest of the pack. When you have these hospitals, when you have these prisons, when you have these, what is the word, like, elderly care homes,
mm-hmm.
what is the word I'm looking for?
Assisted living?
Like, assisted living homes.
Or nursing homes.
Or nursing homes, stuff like that. When you have those places that are, like, overpopulated, and, like, they don't have proper resources to, like, feed everyone good food and stuff like that, it's like, well, who doesn't need to be there? Like, I'm sorry, but, like, who is kind of just, like, soaking up resources from everyone else? And that's why, like, when I talk about, there are some rescues, and people are very against, like kill shelters and stuff. But, like, I have very mixed feelings about no kill shelters, because, yes, I think every life deserves to be, like, fought for. But I also think we should have a limit. I think when there are animals who are just, like, too sick to have a good quality of life, when there are animals who honestly are, like, dangerous to the point that they are a danger to their own selves, too, and can't even live with just, like, a single person, like, what kind of quality of life is that for anyone?
Right.
And, like, you're just taking resources from everyone else who could benefit from it.
Well, I think that also applies to, like, some humans as well. And I think that's really, really good point. Prisons. Right.
Those are people who are just going to be in prison for the rest of their life, and it's like, well, honestly, like, why do we have them there then?
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you. I think there are certain people who literally cannot stop hurting others. Cannot stop. And, like, that is a danger to our society. And that's what I mean by, like, you have to have systems in place to care for the most evil people or whatever of society. And if that means axing some of them off, you know, sometimes that's kind of what you have to do, because ultimately they're still living in suffering. Like, they're literally in pain all the time.
Yeah, even if it's emotionally. And, like, yeah, it's something that we should really be considering. And honestly, like, there's another, like, piece to it where I think there also is not enough, listen, I know it, like, costs money and whatever, and I'm obviously, this is going to be a different argument and different discussion. I am obviously very much a proponent of, like, free healthcare for everyone, including animals as well.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think there are a lot of cases where, like, people and animals who are, like, dangerous to the point of, like, not being able to stop. Like, when do we check when it is, like, a brain tumor?
Oh my God.
Why don't we check that it's, like,
for real,
something that's, like, internal, that it's not just, like, a fucking behavioral thing, but it's something that is actually, like, medically going on? And, like, honestly, if someone has a brain tumor that's inoperable, I feel like that's argument enough to euthanize.
No, for real. That's something. Okay, so
we don't think about that enough.
No, we really don't. And it was actually something I never thought about until I had someone in my life whose family member had a brain tumor, and they didn't know about it for years, years and years and years. And they thought, because this person, he or they, whatever, this person was one way for a very long time. You know, nice. I didn't know this person, so I couldn't necessarily describe their personality, but they were a nice enough person, family person. They, you know, did certain things certain ways, right? Like, they had, like, a very specific personality, and then overnight their personality changed completely, overnight, and no one could explain it, no one understood it, and they completely just like went off and did completely different things from what they were doing beforehand. Like moved, had new people in their lives, literally surrounded themselves with a different crowd of people than what they had ever surrounded themselves with their entire life. And didn't, like, they just had this whole different life all of a sudden. And no one really could explain it. No one really knew what was going on. And then they, I guess, I don't know exactly how it was found, but they found out they had a brain tumor and ultimately, unfortunately, passed away from it. But, like, why isn't that something that we are not thinking about, right? Like, I mean, not to blame anyone in that situation, right, that they would have thought about it or anything like that, but it is something that, like, their doctors should have thought about. Like, you're all of a sudden a completely different person? That doesn't make any sense. Like, logically, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
What else could possibly explain that? And I absolutely agree with you that that's something that we should be checking out a lot more than we truly do, because it for sure is a lot more common than we think about.
And I mean, we even had a dog that we had fostered,
mm-hmm.
who had, if I remember correctly, previously had been like abused
and severely abused.
Severely abused to the point that they had brain injury. And this dog would be okay at one moment and then would snap and be severely aggressive to the point that we couldn't foster them anymore. They went to a single person home and was still violent there and ended up having to be euthanized.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, when it comes to situations like that, like, I think it's totally understandable and honestly ethical for that pet to have been euthanized.
Yeah.
And does it suck? Yeah. Is life perfect? No. And I think that's one of those situations where, like, you know what? That's like brain injury, and that is just going to create a problem for the rest of this pet's life, and that's just going to create suffering for the rest of this pet's life.
And not just the pet, but the people around them. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a really, really good point, is that we really don't talk about brain injuries enough. I could probably not even like count the amount of people who come from the NFL, from wrestling, from boxing, from these really dangerous sports. Hockey, who again have a complete 180, start doing all this random shit and like terrorizing people, and then everyone's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why is he all of a sudden being his wife, or why is he all of a sudden like driving off the road, and why is he all of a sudden like vomiting everywhere? Like, because he has a fucking traumatic brain injury, and that changes a person.
Especially when it's long-term like that. And, like, do I think everyone in the NFL should be euthanized? No. But obviously, like, I think that's something. Wow.
Wow.
Wow. But I think that's something that, like, we have to really consider and think about and, like, do something about. Because clearly it's having an effect on people.
Yeah.
And clearly it's causing an unsafe society.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't really agree with allowing people to just run amok in the streets and beat the shit out of their wives and, I don't know, molest their kids, whatever the fuck they're doing, because they have a traumatic brain injury. Like, that's not an excuse. Like, is an explanation, for sure. Absolutely. Of course. It's not their fault, right? Yes, it's sort of their fault that they went to the NFL, but
that's, like, here nor there.
Right.
It's
like
a normalized thing.
Exactly. Like, it's not their fault that they are now disabled, but it is everyone else's problem that they're now like causing harm on everyone. And I don't know, like, is the answer euthanasia? I don't know, but should there be something there in place to say, hey, like, this person has a traumatic brain injury, like, we need to either do daily checkups or something to like not allow this person to like go around and beat the shit out of people and like, you know, knock their girlfriends out in elevators or whatever the fuck they're doing, you know? Like, that's a big deal. And, like, the fact that we don't consider brain injuries or brain tumors, like, more detrimental is bizarre to me. Because, like, I understand that we don't fully understand the brain, but
I understand it enough to know that these problems exist because of it. I mean, fuck, there are people who wake up and speak an entirely different language.
Yeah.
Like, the brain, obviously, has, like, a huge impact on, like, our existence.
Exactly. And it is, like, a big deal. Like, it really is. And it's not cool to just allow people to, like, just do whatever the fuck they want, to be honest. But then, like, not allow other people to not, I don't know, it's kind of weird to me. I am someone who does happen to listen to a lot of true crime and stuff as well. And the amount of times that I've heard people just, like, get off on, like, multiple things that they've done to, like, really damage people, like, either killing or raping or whatever, it's kind of insane to me. And, like, again, I'm not advocating for euthanasia for, like, any type of crime. I think we have to be very careful with it again. And personally, I'm a proponent of minimizing the death penalty because I don't necessarily think that everyone who gets it is really should be eligible for it.
Which is kind of insane because we only have X amount of people on death row and it's like even those cases.
Yeah.
But like there are people who have been killed who literally were innocent.
Yeah, falsely accused, innocent. So. I mean,
there's a lot of.
How many, right, like, how many racialized individuals have been killed just, like, simply because of their race?
Right.
That's not fair, either, right?
That's why I understand people's hesitation when it comes to, like, legalizing euthanasia on, like, a widespread
basis. Yeah, because there's a lot of bias and a lot of abuse that could happen to the system, and it's not really fair to, like, discount that, right? Because that's a big part of the discussion. I mean, how many countless people have lost their lives on death row who were completely innocent, and it's literally just because of their race, or because of their mental disabilities, or, you know, et cetera, right? Or, like, there's plenty of different reasons why someone's gone to death row that weren't because of their crimes.
Yeah.
Okay, just a quick aside. Our mics died mid-conversation. I think mine died first. So, if the audio kind of changed briefly, that's why, but we're just gonna continue on from here.
We're just gonna continue ranting.
Yeah.
And raving.
And raving. Anyway, back to the regular scheduled programming.
Yeah. So, I think what I was saying before is, like, we just have to be very careful with, like, who, where... talking about and like what we're talking about when it comes to like death row and euthanasia, just because like it can be very abused by so many different people and like so many different things can happen when we just kind of allow for anyone to be like killed or whatever for various reasons. And you know, like, there's a lot of people who there's just not enough, like, evidence for them to be on death row or for them to, like, even be, like, really, like, prosecuted for the things that they've done or whatever. So, I do think we have to be very careful with, like, I don't know, I guess with, like, the qualifications for something like this. But I also do think that, like, I'm not necessarily against the death penalty or obviously against, like, ethical euthanasia of terminally ill people or people who can't truly function. I do think we just have to be very careful when it comes to, like, who we're talking about. Like, there does kind of have to be, like, a very strict checklist almost. And that's just the term I'm using right now because I don't know of another better term, but I do think there has to be very strict qualifications when it comes to this kind of thing. But I also do think that, like, if you so choose to not continue to live for various circumstances, I think that should be your choice, you know?
Yeah, I very much agree. I think it's one of those things that could very easily be abused in the wrong hands.
Yeah.
But I also think it's something that's worthwhile to discuss and worthwhile to figure out a good compromise and a good middle ground and a good way to use it as a tool to create less suffering mm-hmm. in society. and create a healthier society overall. And I understand how, again, I think, like, it just needs so much context behind it.
Yeah.
To be able to have people understand. And I think some people maybe just don't want to understand, and maybe that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's such, like, a hard topic to discuss that, like, some people would rather just not discuss it.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, some of the hardest topics to discuss are the ones that we have to discuss. And again, I feel like overall my perspective of it is, especially as, like, a domesticated population, we need some kind of way to, like, weed the unfit out.
Mm-hmm.
In the most ethical way possible, and, like, the smartest way possible.
Right. Yeah, I do think it's a discussion that has to be had with, like, so many different types of people, like, having their own, like, thoughts and opinions on it, right? Like, I think that we have to just kind of give it one of those, like, I don't know, like, it has to be, like, a true discussion among professionals and among people who are qualified to talk about something like this. But I do think that, like, we already have certain things in place for this type of thing. Like, again, like, the death penalty, as well as assisted suicide in certain states. And so it's not something that's unheard of, and it's not something that we have altogether ruled out as something that we don't want. And so I think that, like, because of that, we just have to continue to have this discussion to make it as ethical as possible. Because I do think that, like, as domesticated beings, right, we hold ourselves to the standard of ethics. Right.
That's like kind half of the point. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we don't live in a uncivilized society for a reason. We all, not, I guess, chose, but, like, we all kind of grew into this society. And I think that it becomes our responsibility to take care of each other in the most ethical, moral, sustainable, and healthy way. And sometimes that does mean weeding out certain people, or at least providing a different path for them when they can no longer function in the society that we have. And again, that's what I was talking about before, is that we have to really think about those people first, right? Like, we have to provide a space for people to like, be able to live their best lives, or, you know, so have you not, I guess. But we have to be able to provide, like, the best of the best for everyone. And, like, when we talk about the most vulnerable or the most, like, morally depraved, I guess, that's where we find, like, the ability to do that. Because if we can provide for the people that have the most struggle, then we are able to provide, like, for everyone. You know what I mean? Because yeah, everyone can fit into that circumstance.
And I almost wonder, like, just thinking about it, I almost wonder if death can become something that's a little more palatable for people, if it becomes something that's less scary and less, like, ominous and unknown. If, like, you know that you have the ability to end it if need be.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, that unknown of, like, if something happened to me, I would just have to, like, suffer through the recovery, suffer through the outcome of it, instead of having that option of, like, hey, if I, like, I don't know, I do think there are people who, for example, they become, like, paralyzed, or they become, like, they lose limbs or whatever it may be, they're, like, a burn victim or something like that, where, like, it's truly life-altering. I think there are some people, honestly, who might choose the route of assisted suicide, of euthanasia, instead of having to continue to live a life that is so changed that it doesn't feel like theirs anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, yes, there are people who are completely comfortable with stepping into that new life, but I also think that honestly it should be personal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be something where, like, if you don't want that life, like, why do you have to live it?
Yeah, like, it should be your choice.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, but, like, I do think it's important to have a healthcare system where, like, we fight for the right for people to survive these mm-hmm. things. But if they come out the other end and they're like, honestly, like, this is not what I want. This is not, even if it's just, like, mentally and emotionally a quality of life that they desire, even if, like, their body still works in whatever regard,
mm-hmm.
like, if that's not the quality of life, the type of life that they want to live, I, like, don't think that people should be forced to live it just yeah. because the people around them want them to, just because it seems like the most ethical. Because is it really the most ethical to cause someone, like, mental suffering?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's partially because we have this, like, inability to allow people to be selfish.
Yeah.
And I do think that, like, selfishness is kind of very important. As we've talked about in other episodes, like in the antinatalism episode as well, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with being selfish. I think it's wrong to be selfish in terms of, like, causing other people, like, bodily harm. Okay, Mr. Marty. In terms of, like, well, I want, like, you know, just as an example, like, I want sex, so I'm going to go out and, like, hurt people because I want this. You know, like, that's different. Right,
you're bringing other people into that.
Right. But, like, when it comes to your own life and your decisions, I do think that, like, you should be allowed to be selfish. And I don't think that we should be so ashamed of that. Because, like, if I truly feel like I can't do this anymore, like, why is that so shameful for me to bring up? And why is it so taboo? And why should I feel so horrible about, like, that decision? Like, I really do think that, like, that should be my choice.
And also, like, why do we, in the civilization that we live in, why do we have to resort to suicide?
Yeah.
Why do we have to, if someone, like, wants and they have their reasons and they, like, have exhausted all of their options,
mm-hmm.
if they truly are suffering to the point that they, like, want to end their life, I, like, again, I feel like maybe that's that gray area, but it's certainly very case by case of, like, why do we now have to resort to committing suicide and that possibly being something that's painful for yeah. them, that causes suffering, and then that's something that someone else has to find them, that causes someone else trauma and suffering, when we could have a situation where it's, like, understood, it's mutual, it's respected, and it's dignified.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I also think that in terms of suicide, if we're going to go into that, like, realistically, the people who are suicidal, but that's not necessarily, like, the right decision for them, would ultimately, again, be less ashamed to get treatment because they're able to talk about it, because there are systems in place saying, like, hey, this isn't a shameful topic, so why don't you, like, talk to a counselor or talk to, like, someone about these feelings, and then maybe we can discuss why you're feeling this way, and maybe we'll get to the root of the problem, and we're able to kind of, like, work through that and solve it and confront it instead of just living your life in pain. You know, like, that's something I think both of us have gone through, where we've had to confront our problems, and through that have realized, okay, like, actually, I want to take my life in a different direction, or I don't want to ultimately, like, end it, because the things that were making me feel uncomfortable were the things that I just needed to, like, fix and change, or change the environment, or whatever it is, right? Like, there would be more systems in place to be able to have those open discussions instead of feeling like, oh my God, if I talk about this, I'm going to get in so much trouble and everyone's going to hate me and they're going to think I'm crazy and blah, blah. And instead, if we had an open forum where we could openly discuss these issues, then people would feel more inclined to be able to talk about the things that they're experiencing and not feel so ashamed about it. And it wouldn't be so uncomfortable for other people to hear about it. Because I know personally, I've had discussions with people about topics like this. And it's a very, very uncomfortable discussion because, like, on both sides, you're not really entirely sure what to say. And you're not sure if you're going to send someone over the deep end, or they're not sure, or you don't really know how to, like, process all of this. And also, like, if I tell someone else, like, will they get in trouble, or will they be sent away, or, like, will something bad happen to them? And instead, we can have systems in place where these things aren't so taboo, and that allows for people who are having those feelings to, you know, either, like, be able to have an ethical and safe environment for that, or have a safe environment to talk about things and realize, oh, actually, that's not the route that I want to go down. I actually just want to talk about these things that are going on. And I think that that dives back into selfishness, because I think that we as a society, at least in America, I can't necessarily speak for other countries, but we have this idea that, like, while there are now more discussions around mental health and it's not so shameful, like, I feel like everyone kind of has this idea that, like, okay, like, it's okay to be mentally ill, but it's still not okay to seek help for it, if that makes sense. Like, we're all, like, so ready to be like, oh, I'm so depressed, I'm so anxious, I'm so OCD, bipolar, blah, blah, blah. But, like, we're still not seeking treatment for it. We're just kind of, like, putting these labels on ourselves instead of being like, okay, well, why am I depressed? Like, you're not just depressed. There's a reason for it. And we can work through those things in order for you to feel better about it. And, again, like, we can have open, like, forums and open discussion around these issues instead of just allowing people to continue to suffer and memeing it. You know what I mean? Like, we're literally just, like, memifying our own mental illnesses instead of actually, like, confronting and facing them. And it's still because seeking treatment is still seen as shameful. You're still seen as crazy. And you can still be physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually harmed for seeking help. And I think that's a huge problem. And again, I think if something as taboo as death and suicide could become a larger discussion, then we would have more programs in place where people actually felt safe to have those discussions and seek treatment, or at least, you know, something.
At least, like, bring it out to the open, because,
yeah,
I very much agree. I feel like suicide in itself is something where most people don't, like, necessarily want to end their life. They just don't know how to live their life.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference, is that, like, the only reason they want to kill themselves is because they, like, don't know how to live otherwise.
Well, and it's also, like, I think they don't know how to, or not don't know, I think it's, like, they are put into a circumstance where they can't live their lives.
Well, that's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, and it's just, like,
they don't see another way out.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like, I remember watching this movie, it was Archie's final project, and one of the things the counselor says is, like, you don't actually want to die, you just want to change your life. You want to kill the person that you are and become the person that you want to be. And that's, like, the majority of people, specifically younger people who are suicidal, is that they feel like they're stuck in these circumstances. And instead, we can offer a different route because that's realistically what they're looking for. And also, like, not for nothing, but, like, people are allowed to be seeking attention. Like, I don't really understand. Like, I think that's, like, also a huge thing. It's like, oh, well, you're just an attention seeker. Yeah, like,
it's like we're
social beings.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we do want attention.
That's like the whole thing.
It's not a bad thing. Yeah.
Like, when you deserve attention.
Yeah, people do deserve attention.
We deserve to care about each other and we deserve to be cared about.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think that exactly what you're saying, like, where it becomes a problem is that, like, we have. Well, first of all, like, the life that we live is just completely unnatural.
Yeah.
And completely, like, flipped to what, like, we were, like, initially created, I suppose, and, like, what we're, like, wired to exist in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we already have that kind of going against us.
Right.
And I don't just mean, like, I mean, like, the life that we live on, like, an everyday basis. Like, we're not meant for all this, and especially with technology and... It's just, like, it's a lot, and I don't think that it is anyone's fault that, like, mental illness has become such a widespread thing. And I think that, like, yeah, like, everyone is, I suppose, like, some form of mentally ill to some extent, but I don't necessarily think that all mental illnesses are, like, true illnesses to the point that they need to be cured. We all just, like, are in circumstances that don't allow us to thrive.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes a problem, and that's where it becomes overwhelming for some people to deal with it. And I fully believe that, like, if we did have the ability to talk about these things in a much more, like, open and rational way, then, like, they wouldn't be as big of an issue as they are.
No. No, because realistically, like, when I personally started to actually, like, confront, like, the issues that I was having, like, I mean, I don't want to say, like, I cured anything, but I worked through a lot of issues and have become a much more authentic, healthy person because I, like, actually confronted those issues. And, like, yes, like you said, like, we're not necessarily set up with conditions that would allow us to thrive. But I do think that we can live to the best of our ability if we were given true, like, I don't know, like, true, like, care. Just, like, caring about each other.
Yeah.
And why does it always lead back to community? Because that's always the answer.
Well, because it really is the answer. And, like we have... like, the resources to give ourselves what we need. I just don't think that we use them in the way that's practical.
Yeah.
Like, we have the ability to create a society that is, like, never gonna be, like, perfect, per se, but I think that's, like, fine.
Yeah.
And I think, in a sense, like, imperfection is what, like, breeds creativity and, like, innovation and stuff like that. So, like, I don't think that perfect is ever, like, going to be fully achieved, because I don't think it's supposed to be fully achieved. I think that's kind of the point, is to continue to grow and progress.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, some of these issues are just things that, I don't know, as, like, an uneducated 24-year-old white woman, I'm like, this is so obvious.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Like, this is so obvious to me of, like, things that we could change to make our everyday lives better for everyone.
And, like, why wouldn't you want that? Yeah. Like, that's what I don't understand, is, like, why people don't want others to thrive.
Yeah.
So. Boring. Though it can be euthanized.
Yeah.
Over.
Yeah.
Slay.
Slay. Euthanize. No one can really see that, but that was, like, supposed to be with, like, a snap, snap kind of thing.
Like, a, like, snap and a
nice.
Yeah. In a Z formation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw it.
Yeah. You saw the vision.
Yeah. Sure.
But, yeah. I think, I guess, just to, like, tie it back into euthanasia as a whole, I think our opinions are pretty similar.
Yeah.
And have been expressed. But overall, it's going to be a tricky topic, just given the nature of what it is. But I think just by talking about it, just by creating a discussion around it, we can talk about things that are maybe a little more uncomfortable, but also will give a better understanding as to, like, the world around us and, like, the life that we live.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really important to have uncomfortable discussions. And realistically, I think it's important to do the uncomfortable and,
yeah,
like, not constantly be uncomfortable, but so sometimes confront the things that make us uncomfortable.
And, like, question why it's uncomfortable in the first place.
Exactly.
Honestly, like it really critically shouldn't think. Be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it really shouldn't be uncomfortable to discuss, like, ways to make death comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, death, again, is inevitable for all living beings. That's the point of living, is that one day you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't before, and now you are, and you won't be after this.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, the point of life itself.
Right.
So I think it's, like, it shouldn't be uncomfortable, and instead it should be embraced. And if we can create a way to make death comfortable, palatable, and, like, safe in a sense, then, like, why wouldn't we?
Yeah. Yeah, we have the ability to do so, so, like, why not?
And that's how I think there are a lot of ways that, like, the veterinary industry needs to kind of catch up to certain things, which, like, I don't blame it. I think, like, it's just, like, maybe the resources and stuff isn't there, just because obviously human med is going to get, like, more of that, like, the funding and stuff like that. But I think that's one thing that, like, VetMed has over human med, where, like, we have the understanding and the capability to end suffering in an ethical way. And, yeah, again, I think it's one of those things where, you know, I don't love it because I love death and killing and stuff. I love it because it's something that's so innovative and so, like, unheard of outside of the veterinary world.
Mm-hmm.
But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be solely in vet med. It should be something that's across the board. It should be something that's available to people as well, because no one should have to suffer if it's needless.
Yeah, if they don't have to. Like, why are you putting people through that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think that, like, of course, realistically, like, there's other things that kind of come first when it comes to human care, that, like, we're literally allowing people to suffer for no reason, like homelessness or starvation and hunger and things like that. Like, we're needlessly allowing people to suffer for no reason whatsoever. We have so many resources to provide for people. That I do think that end-of-life care is kind of almost on the back burner of people's minds in a lot of ways, especially with everything in today's world that's going on. But I do think that is something that we do need to kind of bring to the forefront, because it is something that every single person, animal, and so have you, will experience. And again, if we can make it as least, like, painful as possible, then why shouldn't we?
Yeah. Why shouldn't we?
And, like, not for nothing, but it would make it as least painful as possible for everyone involved, not just the party that is going through with it, but also their loved ones would have a chance to say goodbye before they were, like, suffering and all this other stuff, you know? Yeah. And you don't have to have someone full-time taking care of them and everything else. And
yeah, it's such, like, a drain, like, even, like, financially.
Yeah.
To be having someone in hospice or something like that, when it's, like, you're already paying so much to do, like, funeral services and all that kind of shit. It's, like, now, yeah, like, you're just draining someone's, like, financial capabilities in every other way, too. When it's, like, especially in these circumstances that we're discussing, it's, like, the suffering is already occurring.
Yeah.
You're basically at this point just, like, waiting for them to die.
Right. Well, it's like you're causing so much suffering of the living. Like you're saying, like, why would you drain the resources of someone who is going to continue to live for someone who is not?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
It's just fucking stupid. I think most things are kind of fucking stupid, but like,
true.
This is just like, it's kind of overwhelming how dumb it is.
And again, it's one of those things where like we already have like begun to implement it, mm-hmm. and it's already something that like exists in vet med, so it's not like, and it's like normal. Like I see like multiple euthanasias a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something that it's like that rare case. It's like I, like we have like fond memories. The company that does the cremation services, they come every single day to pick up. Like you know, mm-hmm. like it's something that like is so normalized in vet med, and it's only like slowly being a thing in the human like world that like doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah.
Mhm. So,
I agree.
Yeah. That's, I
think that was pretty thorough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's our thoughts and opinions on euthanasia.
Euthanasia?
Euthanasia. I'm sorry. I still really love the word.
Yeah. Is one of those words.
No matter the undertone, like, I kind of just love the word. The name, it's kind of beautiful.
It's, like, almost like nostalgia. Yeah. Like, it just has that, like, little, like, cutesy ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We love the Shaws.
Shaws. Shaws.
And with that,
bye!
Thank you for listening to Bell on Earth, the podcast. We hope that your minds have been expanded and your bussies have been opened.
Be sure to rate and follow the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music.
DITS Podcast is brought to you by Free Studio Productions. It's hosted and produced by Cassidy and Casey Bell. Big thanks to our executive producer, Derek Benton.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for all of your content needs. See you later, haters.